following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
This is a ForceCast Microcast. Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Yeah, we're joined in the cantina with the star of the one-man Star Wars trilogy. You may have seen him at Celebration 3, Charlie Ross. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you so much. It's good to be in the cantina.
Well, we're happy to have you here, and doubly excited the fact that we're on your tour itinerary here in the Midwest.
Who would have thought I'd be coming to Akron? I mean, it seems so remote in some ways. You know, it's sort of Tatooine-ish, but at the same time, maybe to you guys, it's your Coruscant, so I get to sort of descend upon your Coruscant and my Tatooine.
Well, I got to ask you, I mean, let's kind of start back at the beginning.
Yeah.
Where were you when you first discovered this galaxy far, far away?
You mean the show or Star Wars itself?
Star Wars itself, yeah.
You know, I grew up in British Columbia, Canada, and lived half of my life for the first few years in Waikiki, sort of back and forth. So Hawaii and then British Columbia.
Oh,
and,
you poor thing.
Yeah, it really was like living on Tatooine in some ways, and then it was actually warm at other times of the year. When Star Wars kind of came to the place where I grew up in Canada, the films played for way over a year, and it was sold out for like a bloody year too. It was so terrible. Every time I tried to go see it, I couldn't. So the first time I ever saw it was in Waikiki, when I lived in this sort of remote place that I did in Canada, I eventually got Star Wars taped off of television and was able to devour it daily. And truly, I would do it daily because I had no television reception in the place I'd been living. Just had a couple, fantastic movies on tape. And, Star Wars was basically my most prized possession aside from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was sometimes the only thing I was able to watch.
Well, and judging by the career that it's launched for you, that it certainly paid off, I would say.
I think so. Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes people say that, watching something excessively could be considered a waste of time. But I think I've taken any potential negativity that might have been surrounding the amount of time I spent watching it, and I think I've sort of turned it into a positive thing. I think the biggest discovery I've ever had in my life was that I am not alone. I was able to discover this before, the internet came along, thank goodness, because, with the tools of the internet, you can obviously talk to people that are, perhaps like-minded or, are super fans.
Right.
For myself, I kind of just started finding people sort of through my little show, people that came from all different walks of life and in all different cities that were, I think as knowledgeable, if not more knowledgeable, about things Star Wars, all things Star Wars.
Well, how did you go, Charlie, if I might, how did you go from being a fan, like we all are, to actually having a career, sort of being a one-person embodiment of this trilogy of films?
We've all played Star Wars at some point, I'm sure, and maybe we still do. It's, like, I'm not doing anything in particular that's special, and I don't think I'm even doing anything that you can't even find in the film. Not because it's about the film, but C-3PO, for instance, does. He sort of tells the story up to this point when he's talking to the Ewoks, trying to bring the Ewoks on side with the Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
That's, in a sense, what I do, and it's, in a sense, what we did as kids. So, how I was able to take, that sort of even kid-like exuberance, the way we play Star Wars, we reenact it, even when we're just chatting with each other, take it, make it a larger script, which is, of course, based upon the film, and then, you know, suddenly make it my life career, I have no idea. I wish I knew.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, it's once you start down that path, it forever will dominate your death. It really is. And, yeah, it's so odd that, and it's odd to me, and yet kind of a miraculous thing that something that came from such a place of love and admiration, you know, for the films has, in a sense, continued positive things happening in my life. It's like the love that I had for the film, I'm not being punished for. If anything, I'm being rewarded by being able to share it with other people. I think that's the thing, though, we can find, though, with things like Star Wars conventions and things like that. Like, if you're a costumer or you're a collector or you write comics or, you know, extended fiction, you can still be part of the legacy that is Star Wars, that we've, you know, obviously all found some sort of something similar in our experiences, and yet can share our individual experiences and, you know, I don't know, even our observations on all things Star Wars. You know, you don't really get many other genres, many other sort of franchises in the world that will allow you to actively be a fan like Star
Well,
Wars.
That's true.
I mean, I could be wrong, yeah. But I think that's pretty fair to say.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, clearly there are other properties that have dedicated fan followings, but Lucasfilm gives you an ability to really kind of, and we've had a lot of Star Wars authors on the show, and one of the expressions that's used is they like to play in the sandbox. You know, well, Lucasfilm lets you do that.
Yeah, man. Because, you know, I did a Lord of the Rings show, and the sandbox is kind of a private beach, you know, in a sense. It's much more of a who's got the dough, you know, who can play. And I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I didn't expect that things would be quite so open as they have been with Lucasfilm. And, I mean, thank goodness for that, because if it wasn't for Lucasfilm and the way that they are, I would just be just another person, you know, looking for acting work. Well, no, I mean, there's so many people out there that are just trying to find the work. And this is kind of marrying the dream of being an actor with the dreams that are ignited from Star Wars. It just seems to me to be the best sandbox in the world, where maybe the sand's kind of, you know, it has golden properties or something like that.
Well, so let me ask you, was this something that kind of started where you were just sort of doing these impressions and these scene snippets for friends and family, and they said, hey, you know, Charlie, maybe you got something here.
No, I wish it was that. I wish that I could sort of sit there and say, well, yeah, I used to, like, you know, close down class by, you know, doing my Vader stuff or something. It was never like that. I mean, you remember when there wasn't sort of the stigma of the geek, you know, kind of surrounding all things Star Wars. You remember
the good old days. I remember that.
The good old days when everybody loved it.
Yep.
Even the girls loved it, you know, for the Princess Leia aspect. You know, not that girls don't still love it, but...
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. I think we played it enough as kids and got ourselves just, you know, we knew the stories well enough. We maybe would take our figures or whatever and maybe extend the stories. But just knowing the films well enough and I don't know, just doing your best to sit, maybe even one-up each other with your knowledge of all things Star Wars. I think the only time I ever learned that I could do impressions of things was when it was like a high school talent show, and I got the first prize for doing impressions of the teachers at school. And, you know, it was really exciting. I made $200 for just being basically a bit of a bastard, you know. And this is great, you know, if I can do this, I mean, show me the way to find, you know, the jobs that, you know, wanted some bastard to make fun of people, you know. And not that I'm making fun of Star Wars at all,
right.
It's complete homage. But isn't it weird that sometimes, and this is the thing about doing impressions, sometimes there's things we can find, like idiosyncrasies that we can find perhaps annoying, but at the same time lovable. And, you know, even if you're doing an impression of your mom, you know, maybe she does something that kind of bugs you, but at the same time, it's so very much her, and in that way, you kind of love her for it.
Right.
It may only sort of appeal to you and maybe your family, but if your family is sort of the whole world of Star Wars and Star Wars fans, then we're kind of doing, when I'm doing impressions of like Yoda and Vader and Luke and, you know, fill in the blank, you know, little tiny idiosyncrasies that we've all noticed. We've all sort of maybe at times been annoyed, but at other times love it because of it. You know, it's kind of sharing it with a larger family. It's a source of reference that you just can't find an equal in anything else, or at least I haven't been able to find an equal in anything else.
Well, that's what I found so interesting about your performance, and I have to confess, I haven't seen the full show. However, but I have seen your wonderful clips that were available on Cinemax.
Oh, on the internet, yes, of course.
Yeah, and what really struck me the most is how subtle your performances are in a way. Some of them are very subtle, and I was going to ask if was there ever a point where when you first started doing this that you were surprised where the laughter was or where the recognition was, because maybe it was just something you thought just you noticed about a performance.
No, as a matter of fact, that what you sort of asked me there is the very difference between, say, like the average audience and, let's say, like a con going to Celebration 3 or something. When, like, there is always, in every show I do, there's always the subtlety that I leave in there. And sometimes I think it kind of falls on deaf ears. Other times you can hear certain titters out there in the audience. You know, that there's a few people, kindreds, that are getting it as well as perhaps others. But then, imagine taking those little titters, perhaps, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe the guffaws that you hear about something. Or you hear sort of in reference to something subtle in the show. And then multiply it by, you know, not tens of times, but hundreds of times. Or in the case of Celebration 3, thousands of times, where I'm doing the show for 3,500 people. And, you know, if I had, say, let's say I had, 40% of the audience was tittering about something. Well, 40% of 3,500 people tittering is like the loudest audience you've ever heard in your life. And then there's people actually laughing out loud about it. It's just, it's unbelievable. So something that's very subtle, I don't know, you almost feel like you're kind of that butterfly that you just, you flap your wings and the next thing you know, there's a tornado or a hurricane or something like that. You could almost begin to lose yourself in thinking like, I am God or something like that. I'm very small and the whole world reacts. And it's just the difference between audience sizes and using things like, movie screens to be able to do that. And obviously, doing it, for the demographic that you get at a convention, like a Star Wars convention, the other people that have noticed the subtle things that you have, it's quite reaffirming. And I realized, like I say, that I am certainly not alone in this world, in having observations or recognizing things that other people have already recognized.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like I said, it is those subtle things. I mean, you're kind of like, in a way, like a Jerry Seinfeld of Star Wars, where it is about the observations and the simple things that maybe you take for granted, but they're funny when they're brought out. And if you don't mind, Charlie, too, if for somebody that's new, that's listening to the show, that hasn't seen your show, could you kind of describe it for them? What's in store for them when they go see it?
What's in store for it? I want you to take your own, every person's personal experience of Star Wars. So in other words, what's your bringing, your own personal baggage. And then you're going to see me come out on stage. And I don't use any costumes other than black clothing. I have a microphone, a head microphone. I have a lighting design that goes along with the show. But I'm not using any costume, props, sets, or anything. And I'm conjuring, in a sense, Star Wars, our experience of Star Wars, telling the story, not through exposition, but purely through lines and impressions of the characters, telling the linear story, the original trilogy, in 1 hour. So it's just myself. Yeah, and I'm basically flopping around like a dying fish, but, I'm sort of doing Star Wars. And it is so strange to see. Like, if somebody didn't know what they were getting into, right, they didn't even know what I was doing, they would be wonderfully confused. And it would be great, because it would be almost like watching a person having a fit on the street. however, if you know what you're getting into, it's a one-man Star Wars trilogy. I mean, I could come out there and use costumes and sets, but honestly, unless I spent a couple million dollars on really looking great, it would be nothing short than lame. It would be lame. I mean, it would be a one-man band type of thing, and right. I would have to do tons of costume changes. And hell, man, if I could do it right, I'm sure it would look really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the most portable show on the planet, man. It truly is, probably on all planets, you know, if you consider the Star Wars universe. It's something that, you know, I could... all I need is a suitcase, and I just need to show up. And, you know, if my suitcase gets lost, I can still do the show. That's the brilliant part of it. I use a bit of Star Wars music just for the opening, like before people, you know, when people are walking into the theater. And I use it just at the end when people are leaving the theater. But aside from that, it's just me.
Yeah.
And, it's wonderful to think that even with nothing more than our love, that we can celebrate the love, our love of it, with each other. And it's, yeah, to me, it's a miracle of not only theater, but of Star Wars.
Well, so, Mike, now I'm thinking, if you've got this incredible canon of images and dialogue, you've got over 6 hours worth.
Yeah.
Was the challenge what to leave out, or is it that you don't leave anything out?
No, I'll have to leave a lot out. I think it's been a source of, it's not as big as the debate of the, you know, who shot first type thing, and I believe some guys at MIT actually did actually saw that, but I don't want to get into it. To tell you the truth, what I tried to do was, instead of sitting down and pulling stuff from the films as I watch it, I sat at the computer and just tried to write what I could remember. And I tried to imagine that I was telling the story as quickly as possible, you know, as I could, but still getting the details, trying to tell the story through just lines of dialogue and whatnot to a group of people that have never seen Star Wars. How can you do it? By doing it this way, yes, sometimes you add in some stuff that you can get rid of, but you'd be amazed at how streamlined the story really is, how simple the tale truly, truly is, and that, you know, you're left with a rather sort of streamlined and healthy version, healthy running time of the Star Wars trilogy. And yes, of course, things get cut out. Important characters that you deem to be very important, yes, they get cut out, but...
Please don't tell me it's a Lobot.
A huge part, actually. I extend the Lobot. you know, weirdly enough, though, I mean, there are some really strange things that do actually make it into it. I always wanted to get the gonk in, but I couldn't get the gonk. there's just no way. But if I ever did like an extended version of the show, I would do like a director's cut and add in all the things that we wanted to leave in but had to cut out.
I like the idea of maybe the one man Star Wars trilogy special edition.
Special edition, exactly, with better explosions. You know, they'd be just as lame as they were before. People say, I notice the difference. I totally notice the difference. Yeah, no, I'd have to do like when the Death Star blows up, I'd have to do like the shock wave and stuff like that. that would be the extent of my special edition, unfortunately.
How long have you been doing the show, Charlie?
4 years now.
4 years. And yeah, has it evolved much, or is it pretty much the same show you sat down and wrote at the computer?
Well, it is the same skeletal structure, let's say, and that, you know, I would say out of the hour that you see, let's say 50 minutes of it will always be the same, but there's sort of 10 minutes that have mutated, in a sense, rather than grown, mutated over the years, because the new films came out, and they kind of informed some of the jokes that I make. you'll see them. But, I mean, in particular, I'm talking about, say, I call it the great lie of the trilogy, which is rather odd because I don't believe anybody quite lies the way that Obi-Wan Kenobi lies. I mean, I know it's depending upon one's own point of view, but I think it's called George Lucas stalling for time until he finishes the films. Because, I mean, he doesn't have to tell, you know, the reason or how, you know, Anakin sort of fell, how Anakin became Darth Vader, you know, etc. But, you know, the great lie of, you know, that you know, a pupil of his named Darth Vader, you know, he, you know, betrayed and murdered Anakin. It, in a sense, is true, but damn, that's really stretching it. You know, if you think about it, the only person that ever came close to killing Anakin was, no matter how you look at it, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He came as close to actually killing, you know, Anakin as anybody possibly could. Chopped off his arms, his legs, and then watched him as he, you know, basically fell into a river of lava. So, yeah. But he's not going to say that, of course. He's going to say that Vader, you know, murdered and betrayed him and all that. And it buys him some time and buys Lucas some time so he can make the films, right? But it's just the extent of the great lie. Right. I just think it becomes almost a comic moment because... Yeah. He takes a little moment in the first film and considers what he's going to say to Luke when he's like, how did my father die? He just comes up with the biggest load of crap he can possibly do. You know, but still not, he's bending the truth, but man, only a Jedi could bend the truth like that.
You know, Charlie, you'd be a great person to ask this. And Pete and I have had discussions on the show prior, and I'm always the guy that's sort of sticking up for the actors in these films, particularly in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
I really believe that they don't get the justice that they deserve because, yes, some of the dialogue is very cardboard, you know, cut out. Yeah. But I think there's some tremendously wonderful performances in Mark Hamill and Alec Guinness.
Mark Hamill's unbelievable.
He sells all those scenes with Yoda in both Empire and Jedi.
He's not even acting, you know, against the person who's talking back to him.
Right.
You know, you have Frank Oz that's potentially working underneath all those boards, you know, so he could barely even hear his voice, and he's completely committed to it. I mean, if you've ever done any film acting before, damn, it is very difficult, because not only do you have this total artifice, you know, as acting is, but you also have all these people that are standing beside you, you know, with all their equipment. You have a camera right in your face. The lights are going. You're under the gun to sell it, to make it right. I mean, that is your job.
Yeah.
But if you start adding things like blue screens or Muppets or, you know, not even having a person to deliver the line that's going to be the eventual person speaking for real, like Jabba. You know, you have some dude doing Jabba's lines, but doing it really, really poorly. You can see just and hear just how hard that job is, how committed an actor has to be.
Yeah.
And to give you another example, when I met Ian McKellen, he came and saw my Lord of the Rings show. I was always curious, and it's because of something I heard about in when they made Jurassic Park. They were using cardboard cutouts basically as the eye lines for dinosaurs. So that's what the people were having to work with. I asked him about the Balrog. In other words, the you shall not pass, mm-hmm, you know, type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was acting versus a tennis ball. A tennis ball hanging from a string. So here he's covered in sweat and his own blood, and he's raging against, you know, this fiery demon, which is a tennis ball. Now that, man, is what you call commitment. And whether or not people can poo-poo, you know, and feel, I don't know, I guess they feel elevated by poo-pooing the cardboard, the wooden performances of certain people.
Right.
But, man, these things would not exist and last as long as they have if they weren't kind of miraculous performances.
Yeah, it's...
Look at a lot of other sci-fi that's come out. And how things can be really heightened and be like, what do you mean? You know, like just sort of really kind of campy. And yeah, I guess you kind of get maybe a certain amount of camp with Star Wars, but you get a lot of commitment. And it's taking, you know, a huge amount of risks, you know, because it's kind of like it's being a geek before the geek is the geek. It's wearing its heart on its sleeve and really putting itself out there to be ridiculed or loved. And I think that's why we choose to love it. And whether or not, in retrospect, we choose to sort of poo-poo, you know, Mark Hamill or whomever, I don't know, man. Get it in perspective.
Yeah,
and try to work it on.
Very well said. And, okay, so you've done the Lord of the Rings show in front of Ian McKellen. Talk about maybe some folks that have seen the Star Wars show that might have gave you just sort of the nervous stomach before you went on stage. Was there ever...
You're breaking up here. I'm sorry. Hearing you.
I'm sorry about that. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you now, I think, yeah.
Okay. You were talking about actually performing the Lord of the Rings one-man show in front of Ian McKellen. Was there ever a point where you were performing the Star Wars show in front of some of the Star Wars celebrities?
Was there, like, doing it for other Star Wars celebrities?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, at Celebration 3, I had sort of an interesting, you know, an interesting hive of, you know, scum of various members of the cast, you know, either, you know, the big cast or the small cast. I know... worked. Davis got to see it, or at least most of it. Sorry, what's his name? Who, Anakin from the first from episode one.
Mm, you know, Jake Lloyd. Lloyd. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was able to see it, and I had Boba Fett, the original Boba Fett.
Right.
He saw it. What's his name?
Why Jeremy Bullock.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And actually, when I did I hosted the Fan Film Awards at San Diego Comic Con in 2003 or maybe it was 2004. Don't remember. Yeah, it was 2004. And there was a bunch of big wigs from Lucasfilm, but also some cast members that were there as well. Namely, the young Jango Fett was there, and actually Jeremy Bullock saw it for the time there.
Did any of these, the presence of any of these folks make you a little bit more nervous, or do you just go out there and give it the same show no matter what?
If you think of all the shows, if I think of all the shows I've ever thought I could put in front of a group of people, this is one that I have worked on very, very hard that I think has been pretty well, you know, tried, tested, and ends up being a pretty, truly a good show for me. I feel confident in being in front of anybody, including George Lucas himself, if he ever, you know, will get a chance to see it. And that's a difficult thing to say because... you know, it's hard to kind of keep your confidence, but I don't get nervous about being in front of people, and I don't get nervous about the show because I'm only there in front of those people for one reason. And once you start sharing your love of something like Star Wars, it's kind of hard. It's almost addictive. You want to keep doing it. And the chance to sort of do this show for someone like George Lucas, let's say, is sort of like meeting the maker. And you just want to meet the maker. You want to, if you don't impress him, then maybe he'll shake his head and go, "God, he's crazy." You know, at least it's a reaction, you know,
right. That's
than,
right.
Better than nothing.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Well, and if you could, how did the deal with Cinemax come about where they were looking for something to promote, obviously the HD marathon?
Yeah, right. Oh, well, that was weird, man. I was in New York doing the show off-Broadway for 5 months, and my agents in America are William Morris. They're a rather large agency, and they were contacted. My agent down there, his name is Roland Scahill, and he's really young, and he's awesome. He keeps looking out for sort of the weird things. So, I mean, I got to do some auditions for like video games that came out, and alas, I didn't get cast. but it was okay. However, this thing was super crazy and cool, and there were so many people that were shortlisted to do them. And it wasn't until I was in England almost a year later that I kind of got these strange emails from the people at Cinemax where they're like, "Hey, man, aren't you interested in doing this?" I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" I guess my agent wasn't necessarily getting back to them. and I thought, man, you can't let this ball drop. This is rad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, they were very well put together. They were very cool. And if you
had
a chance...
Man, we had such a good time. Oh. We had such a good time doing it, too. And you know what the cool thing was, though? It was very much as... you know, the way Star Wars has worked out, the people at Cinemax were so hilarious. Well, they're actually from HBO, but, you know, I pitched the idea of doing it in the diner type of situation where I'm like the worker, and they were totally open to it. You know, they had actually envisioned it being something weird, sort of similar to that.
Yeah.
But by me being sort of the kind of the kooky kind of, you know, worker who's really excited about Star Wars coming out, and so much so that I can't really control myself even while I'm at work. He totally dug it and went with it. And it's just neat sometimes to meet people that are open to being creative and are creative already. It's a difference between, say, what they had to make the commercials, which was somewhere in the area of like $250,000, And someone like me, when I make a show, I'm lucky if I ever spent $250. So it's neat to have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of extra help and some money behind your ideas. It totally can be, you know, cool. And if you saw them, I totally enjoyed them, man. I enjoyed making them, and I'm really proud of the way they turned out.
Well, I still got them on my iPod. And,
oh, sweet.
if you haven't had a chance, I think they are still available. If you do a search for Star Wars in iTunes and look at the podcasts.
Yeah. The sad thing is that my name is no way tied to it. So, like, One Man Star Wars, you can watch it. it won't take you to onemanstarwars.com, my website, and it won't tell you who I am. I feel a bit ripped off.
It's because your agent didn't return that phone call, I think. That's probably what it was.
Damn him. Damn him all to hell.
Well, Charlie, we want to thank you for taking the time with us. We just have a couple more questions.
Yeah, go
and
for
I
it.
Can't think of somebody that would be better to ask these questions. I'm going to turn it over to Pete. This is sort of our Inside the Actor's Studio moment, if you've ever seen that show.
I have indeed. So
I'm going to give it to Pete and let him take it away.
All right, okay. this is our version of it, so it's obviously geared towards Star Wars. So we'll start off with, and I'm sure you have one, what is your favorite Star Wars line?
It would have to be, luminous beings, are we? Not this crude matter.
That's a very good one.
It was cut out of the film. It's actually the first thing that Anakin says to Luke in the novel when his mask comes off. And, of course, you know, it's the same thing that, you know, obviously that Yoda says to Luke. I just thought it was a wonderful circular bit of, you know, of writing that, you know, alas, it didn't make it into the film, but it always stuck with me.
Okay, what is your favorite Star Wars moment?
Favorite Star Wars moment? Ooh, boy. That is a difficult one. But, you know, I think there is a turning point. There are so many, but one that's always stuck with me. It always gave me chills when I was a kid. It was when Luke says to Yoda, I don't believe it. And Yoda says, that is why you fail. It's such a lesson being driven home. And I don't know. I remember it still, you know, sometimes gives me shivers just to think about it because it is such a sort of a realization, and it's a revolution for Luke, because from that point there, things change for him and he has to sort of believe. So obviously it's the turning point in the films and the turning point in the story.
Right, right. Okay, what Star Wars moment makes you sad?
Sad. The part where I wasn't cast as all the characters in it in the original films. That's the part that makes me most sad. I think there is actually kind of a part that I'm a little bit sad. It's kind of because Han Solo, he becomes, I kind of missed the sort of the punchy repartee between he and Leia. And when they, you know, when he chooses to sort of abandon his ways as a pirate, in a sense, and become part of a family, there's a bit of an edge that's lost. And it kind of just makes me a little bit sad. But I think ultimately the thing that also makes me kind of sad is that the last time that we ever see Han Solo in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon is when he's flying towards Cloud City. He doesn't appear in the Millennium Falcon at all in Return of the Jedi. And that always made me a bit sad. So, I don't know.
Something I had never thought of, Charlie.
He gave up the arms of the Falcon for the arms of, you know, Leia, and I can't really I can't fault him for it.
She's a little more squishy.
Yeah, of course. He eats donuts after the, you know, basically sits around and eats donuts with you know, with Chewie once the Death Star is blown up, right? What else is there to do?
That's right. Okay, so who is your favorite Star Wars character?
I guess in a sense, because he's so mysterious, and even though we do know a lot about him, it's got to be the Emperor, only because he's sort of like Gollum, in the sense that Gollum has 500 years in which it's lost time, where he's biding his time. He's sort of growing more and more mad. And, you know, you think about, the emperor, or, you know, Palpatine. He seems to imply that he was the one that killed, you know, his master. What was his name again?
Plagueis.
Darth Plagueis. Now, if Darth Plagueis existed as long back as he had in order to become a Sith legend, he must be incredibly old. So chances are he's been sort of swallowing up and spitting out new apprentices for millennium, or maybe a millennium, or at least hundreds of years. And we never get to hear sort of the, you know, whatever happened to Palpatine? You know, like, when he was born, like, was he a car salesman for a while? What did he do? And so he's sort of the guy that we see him at his height of power. But there had to be a long, slow build, and I find him to be the most intriguing of the characters.
Okay. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but do you have a least favorite?
Least favorite character?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and take the Jar Jar route, because, you know, I've become very Switzerland about Jar Jar. No, I really have. It's like, I understand why they've had to make Jar 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 Jar.
Yes.
Do I have a least favorite character?
And sometimes the answers to these are quite irrational.
Yes.
One of my favorites is Ben Quadraneros.
Really?
Yes.
What an odd one to be sort of pissed off about. You know, she's a bounty hunter. She appears on one of those sort of loading, or those off ramps during the pod race. She's got
Aurra Sing.
The
one with the red ponytail.
Well, she doesn't piss me off. They just never did anything with her in the film, man. Like, she's just full of potential, and then they just sort of dropped it. It's like, oh, she's cute. She's, well, there she goes. Okay. Is she in a novel or something? Yeah. I mean, was she in the cartoons? I don't even remember.
No, she showed up in some of the comic books and some of the books, but that's about it.
Yeah, and that's it. So, yeah, I just kind of thought, I mean, I guess it's sort of like a wink or a nod to her.
Yes.
And it makes her legitimate. But at the same time, I kind of wish she would sort of show up at some point. I really thought she might be the, you know, bounty hunter that would be going after Anakin. But maybe she was keeping eyes on him. I don't know. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay, what job would you like to do in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, boy. You know, I always thought there has to be some kind of a cook. You know, that maybe there's like a little sort of restaurant at the center of the Death Star. I mean, I haven't looked at the battle plans. You know, I haven't actually seen the technical plans of it. But I've actually thought it would be a great idea to do either a fan film or a TV show, and I've actually been working on it. So this is a good thing. About a little restaurant at the center of the Death Star. You know, which it would probably be more like a cafeteria. It's a very utilitarian looking place. The food's probably not all that good, but it has to be good enough to satisfy people like Vader and the Emperor. You know, I'm sure they have nice restaurants where they eat, or if they do eat. And, yeah, I think it would be kind of interesting to be just sort of a bum worker, you know, just going about your day-to-day. It's sort of Kevin Smith, you know, and it's observation, but at the same time, there's got to be some kind of restaurant at the center of the Death Star.
Okay, so if you're just willing to be an average worker in the Death Star cafeteria, what would be the least favorite job that you would want to do in the Star Wars universe?
Well, probably be the other work. I don't know, be like the busboy at the same restaurant. You know? The thing is, though, is that you could be whatever you wanted. You could be the most powerful Jedi in the entire universe, and maybe you're just sort of biding your time. You know, as a restaurant worker, because patience is obviously the greatest virtue, right?
That's right.
So you just wait for your time when things sort of go the way they go, and then you just sort of spring your trap or whatever. So the least favorite job, boy, in some ways, I just would never want to be the guy that says, hold your fire. It doesn't need to be any life form. Because, I mean, damn it, if they ever go back over the old work box and he's the one to blame, that's why the Death Star got blown up, you son of a bitch. I mean, he got demoted. You know he got demoted.
If he didn't just get chucked out into space.
You know something? If you take a look when they were dumping the garbage when, you know, just before the Star Destroyer, you know, takes off, and, you know, it would be great to see him floating along there, you know, alongside Slave 2 or whatever. Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. All right. I think Captain Nito is probably out there.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah.
All right, and last question to wrap it up. Yep. If there was another Star Wars movie to be made and you were cast in it, what would you want to hear George Lucas say after he says cut on your last scene?
What would I like to hear him say? Cut. Let's give that boy some more lines. I don't know. I would say, let's make another three, Charlie. You up for it?
Charlie Ross, thank you so much. Now, before we let you go, where can folks keep up with you?
OneManStarWars.com, my website, www.onemanstarwars.com.
And you'll be in Akron, Ohio, in our neck of the woods at the end of February. And
that's right.
We're hoping to see you there.
And I'll be at C4 in Los Angeles, and I'm supposed to be going to Celebration Europe too. So if anybody's over and listening in the UK or Europe, I will see you there.
Fantastic.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.